Mike, what are we talking about on today's episode of Moving the Goalposts?
Today, we do a complete recap of the Patriots' 2021 draft, including the pick of their potential franchise quarterback.
And I finally bid farewell to the one and only Quiddy Pay.
Oh, so sad. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, and tell a friend. Moving the Goalposts wherever you listen.
It's just a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OC.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Moving the Goalposts, New England's number one sports podcast. My name is Nick Mara, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Masala. Mike, how are you now?
Doing well, brother. How are you?
Not so bad. You can check out our social media profiles on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at NickMara94. Mike, where can the listeners reach you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mike_Masala or on Instagram at MikeMasalaNFL.
Be sure to follow along on social media for our podcast social profiles. They're on Twitter and Instagram at MovingThePosts. Mike.
Yes, sir.
The draft is over. And finally. I would have to say at the end of the day for New England, and we're probably going to keep today's episode just to the Patriots draft, because when you're diagnosing 259 individual players, things can get a little confusing. So I think it would be fair if we just keep it to seven.
Fair.
Yeah. But the Patriots, they ended up taking a player in every round, which I wasn't totally expecting. I thought there were going to be more trades than just the move up from, you know, the 2-4s to higher in the second round. But I'm glad that they did what they did. I'm glad that they selected some of the players that they selected. I don't know the majority of the players, so I'm going to kind of have to depend on you, and you're going to be not the shoulder to cry on, or like the post to lean against. We're going to depend on you for the newest New England Patriots. We're going to go into like a little individual diagnosis, I guess, of each individual player. But we'll just go right off the bat, Mike. What were your first impressions, or what are your thoughts on the 2021 draft for the Patriots?
Overall, I think they addressed a lot of their needs, obviously attacking quarterback in the first round. We'll go pick by pick as we go a little bit deeper into this. But they addressed a lot of their needs. In a draft class that was maybe a little bit higher on wide receivers, the Patriots didn't really take one until later in the draft, which was a little interesting. But you went into the offseason, you spent a lot of money on positions that you needed to fill, and you went into the draft and did pretty much the same thing and filled a lot of those little holes you had left here and there. I did find it a little interesting that they didn't draft a cornerback. And to me, that kind of signals that maybe both of these guys are sticking around for at least the year, if not more. I think that's a little interesting to look at if you want to take a little bit of a jump back from there. This team right now, they're set up in a pretty decent position to do a lot of different things. And with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, maybe this team could see a little bit of a resurgence after a down year.
Yeah, I mean, as a Patriots fan, I'm definitely hopeful that they bounce back. I think it would be unfair at this point to unseat the Buffalo Bills as the favorite in the division. They've earned that right. They've built up a great roster, and they've played well over the last couple of years, and they've advanced in the playoffs throughout. You know, they've gone from losing in the wild card round to almost winning in the wild card round against the Texans, and then ultimately losing to making it to the AFC championship game. So The Bills are going to continue to be the cream of the crop in the AFC East. And I think the Dolphins have done a good job adding to their roster as well. I mean, they've had the luxury of having other organizations draft picks that have been pretty decent. Like, I'd say trading the number 3 overall selection to go back to 12 to then move back up to 6 to take Jaylen Waddle, I think, was the player that they took right after Ja'Marr Chase. Like, they're going to be able to build their roster the way they want to. The only question it seems like they may end up having is at quarterback. And I'm not a 100% believer in Tua, but I think that he's good, and he's better than anything they've had for a long time outside of Tannehill. But as we've seen, Adam Gase just ruins quarterbacks.
Right.
So thinking that you can pair Tua up with one of his receivers from college, one of his better receivers from college, although it seems like they were all his better receivers.
Oh, they had a picture that I saw from come from, I think, Pro Football Focus today, and it was Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, Jerry Jeudy, and Henry Ruggs all on the same team like last year. That's insane.
Yeah, I think it was, I saw something similar where they were walking out of a tunnel in their Alabama jerseys, and then there was a Photoshop where they were all walking out in their NFL jerseys.
Yeah.
Real quick, I don't know if I asked you this on last week's episode. How do you feel about the number change in the NFL?
I don't love it, to be honest. And like, I feel like that's the old man yelling at clouds take that we're going to have.
I don't know if it's the old man yelling at cloud take or if it's just we're so used to like linebackers are in the 50s, 90s and 40s. Tight ends are going to be in the 80s and 40s. The linemen are all going to be in like the 50s, 60s and 70s. Like now we're going to run into the part that pisses me off is you've got a player and this is going to be across the board. But like Buda Baker, number 32 for the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Now he's just going to wear 2 or 3, like that screws everything up. So right. It opens up number 32 for who, a running back or a defensive player? Like what if the defensive player would rather wear single digits or wants to wear something in the 50s, but it's being taken by, you know, like a running back or something. Jersey numbers are obviously a secondary conversation when it comes to professional sports, but I'm just used to seeing certain numbers on certain builds of players.
Right. And there were the two things that I saw over like the last week or so were one, the comment of, oh, you can't tell that this 6'5", 245 pound guy is a linebacker just because his number is a little different. Well, you're getting into the age where football is becoming similar to basketball where guys kind of are flexible. They can play safeties. Smaller guys can play linebackers. You can kind of go all over the place.
Yeah. Sort of positionless almost.
Right. It makes it a little bit harder to have that distinction. And Brady made this comment. He was, I'm sure he's mad about it. The fact that he is making it just a little bit more difficult to read defenses. And then on the other side, he did have a point. Like why can't tackles, why can't offensive guards wear different jersey numbers now? Because it's not every position that's able to wear single digits, it's only certain ones. So it doesn't really seem to make all that much sense. You're just playing it up to the guys who are the stars in the league.
Yeah. So let's get back to the draft for the Patriots. Like I said, they took 7 players in 7 rounds. I think it was 7 players in 7 rounds. First round, they went with quarterback out of Alabama, Mac Jones, who I'm sure everybody is now familiar with. We've had tons of discussion leading up to the draft. I'm sure that people have been listening to the radio and watching television and seeing tons of discussion after the draft. But we'll definitely get into the first pick for the Patriots because, let's be honest, it's probably the most important and the one that's going to matter the most in the short term and the long term. So we'll spend plenty of time on Mac Jones. But in the second round, they went 38th overall, where they traded 2 fourth-round picks to move up to select another Alabama player, this time defensive tackle Christian Barmore. I remember last week, it was either you or I had mentioned him as a possibility because the defensive line was kind of an area of need for the Patriots. I know that they were bringing back Lawrence Guy, and they brought in Godcho, and there were a couple of other players that they had signed, but they lost Adam Butler. They're looking to, I think, replace that not nose tackle position, but that interior defensive line position more long term now, similar to how I think they're handling their linebackers. They're going to be handling their linebackers. But is what can you tell us about Christian Barmore?
Well, he's obviously a big body. He is that Adam Butler mold where he's a interior pass rush, maybe isn't going to have crazy sack numbers, but will at least force guys out of the middle, maybe to the outside. I saw a couple people as like a couple of the draft experts saying that, I think it was Teddy Bruschi, actually, linebackers in New England are going to love playing with Christian Barmore because he's going to help guys get out to the side, maybe get into instead of going straight up, you're going to get guys caught in the backfield. You're going to force quarterbacks out and maybe get a few more sacks for your 1,000 edge rushers this team now has. He did have 8 sacks last year, which is pretty impressive coming from the nose tackle position. Sure. There are some like questions about like, is he a 2-gap type player? But you have so many players on this defensive line and you have so many players on this front 7 now that you can do 1,000 different things. So Barmore, obviously, many people had him rated in the middle of the first round. So to slide up and get him, was it 40th overall, something like that?
38.
Right. So you're getting him right in the beginning of the second round. Like, that's pretty good value. And Belichick, obviously, they doubled up on Alabama picks. Another guy from Saban, yeah, who he continues to trust, even though they haven't all worked out, but they've been pretty good for the most part.
You know what? Hold that thought real quick, because when people say that, like, oh, Bill trusting his college guys doesn't seem to work out, and they always bring up like Cyrus Jones and Aaron Hernandez, Jermaine Cunningham, Brandon Spikes, who I think actually did work out. Like,
yeah,
Brandon Spikes was a good player for what they needed him to do. He did it well. Mm-hmm. The connection to Nick Saban has paid off more than it hasn't. Right. Like, I can really only think of Cyrus Jones as a legitimate player that would have been like, we want this guy, we're going to take him early, and we want him to fill a role immediately, which for them was kick returner, and then maybe we'll turn him into a defensive back, and it just never happened. But outside of that pick, he's had a pretty high success rate with Nick Saban off the top of my head.
Absolutely, yeah. Saban's been, and Saban said it this week, he said, I'm going to be honest with coaches. Like, I'm going to be, like, I want to have a good relationship with these guys. I'm not going to just fight for my guy and tell him that this player is going to be great, even though I don't think that. When Urban Meyer, on the other hand, said this week that he's going to straight up just lie and say that say that this quarterback's great. And that's why, I mean, Belichick's relationship with Urban Meyer, they took 1,000 Florida guys that just weren't good.
Right.
Like, you have, like, Brandon Spikes was the best one of all of them.
Yeah.
And you took a lot of shots there. So I do understand the hesitancy, but with Nick Saban, I think it's pretty safe. And from a program like that, and you know what you're getting. You're getting an NFL-ready player whenever you get a guy from Alabama.
Right. And after the second round, New England decided to stay put. There were some rumors about them possibly taking some picks from either this draft or future drafts and moving up so that there wasn't such a big gap between their second-round pick and their third-round pick. But they stayed at the 96th overall position, and they drafted defensive end out of Oklahoma. So we switched from the SEC to the Big 12 and take Ronnie Perkins, who Ronnie Perkins to me sounds like such a white person's name. Like, honestly, this is like the 1950s Boston Celtics point guard. Ronnie Perkins with the ball. Oh, he passes it over to Russell. Oh, Ronnie Perkins. Or like a second baseman from like the 1920s. Like,
yeah, Ronnie Perkins absolutely played for the Boston Bean Eaters. I remember.
Exactly. I remember But they got an edge guy. They got an edge guy, which wasn't a huge position of need, considering they still had Chase Winovich and Anthony Jennings, and who knows what they're going to be doing with Josh Uche. Dietrich Wise came back. He can kind of line up on the inside or the outside on the defensive line. They brought back Kyle Van Noy, who at this point, I think they're going to put him in the middle now. But signing Matt Judon is pretty much, he was their primary pass rusher, at least right going into the draft. Judon was kind of be like your guy, but now they've got another edge rusher in Ronnie Perkins. What can you tell us about Mr. Perkins?
Ronnie Perkins, I mean, he had his best year of his college career last year in only 6 games. He had 5.5 sacks. Pretty impressive. Him and another guy who we're going to talk about in just a minute were both suspended for the first 5 games of the season for a failed drug test.
Because I heard that he had run into some, I'm assuming like a recreational drug test, not like,
yeah,
a PED test.
I think it was, yeah, I think it was just weed.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. This is a take that I saw online that I actually really agree with, is for some reason, NFL teams are still like wary of guys who have failed drug tests, and like that drops them down, where Ronnie Perkins is a guy who I think he was rated as like a mid second round pick, and you got him in the third round. Again, another great value for a guy who PFF had him graded as the only player in this draft with a 90 grade. And I get it. I don't love Pro Football Focus, but they are useful in some metrics. But he was the only player rated a 90 in pass rush and against the run. So you got a guy who can do a little bit of everything again. And in a position where you have a lot of depth, as you had just mentioned, and maybe you don't know exactly who's going to play which roles, he can take his time, get into the NFL. Like a lot of rookies that come in Bill Belichick systems, maybe he takes a year to get fully ready. And then you see where he fits. There was reports last year of Chase Winovich not exactly being type of player that Bill Belichick wants him to be, or playing up to the level that people think he can play at. Maybe Ronnie Perkins either gives him a kick in the ass or beats him out. Either way, I think that's a good situation no matter what, because right. You're getting a good player on the field.
That, typically, number 96 is the last pick in the third round, but, you know, because of compensation, there's extra picks in the third that are tacked on to the end. This actually would have been the 97th pick if New England had held on to their actual third round pick and it hadn't been taken away. But right. It's basically a very long way of me saying, up until the third round, I would say, are players when you select in the first 90 to 100 picks, those are guys that need to be an impact player for you or a starter for you within 2 years.
Right. So I agree.
Ronnie Perkins, they're pretty much saying this is going to be a solid, you know, starting player for us. If not this year, next year. I don't know if it's going to be on the left side or the right side. I don't know if they might be moving Winovich back to linebacker, but Winovich does seem to struggle in the run. And I'm hoping if there was one thing that he was working on this offseason, it's getting better at run stopping or setting mm-hmm. the edge and, you know, keeping to his assignment, because this could very well be a possible Winovich replacement a year or two from now.
Right. And it's also interesting to see the difference in types of like edge rushers that the Patriots now have, because Perkins played more of a hand down, like you are rushing straight up. Whereas when you've seen them in the past be successful with some of these guys, like a Kyle Van Noy, Chase Winovich, Matthew Judon, for the most part, Anthony Jennings, like these are all guys who are kind of stand up edge mm-hmm. rushers. Like what has impressed me this offseason is I thought the run defense was terrible last year.
You saw
a lot of those games where they got absolutely gashed. And the amount of players that they brought into this front seven and the amount of versatile players, I don't think the Patriots really have like a, this is their package. Like they don't really have a base formation. They are multiple. Like they are 3-4, 4-3 nickel. They can do everything because they have so many different players in those situations. Where that may come back to bite them is exactly what we saw last year. Is if you have a lot of younger players coming in and out, how many times did we see 12 men on the field last year? That's never a Patriots thing. And it happened like every other game last year. So That may be a little bit of a problem, but they have so much talent in the front seven now that they can do a little bit of everything.
So after the first three picks, really it's the first four picks were taken from two schools, because they went Alabama, and then Oklahoma again, where they took in the fourth round, 120th overall, Ramondre Stevenson, running back. I'm not surprised that they took a running back. I had a feeling they were going to take a running back because mm-hmm. again, looking at their depth chart, it's pretty much Sony Michel, Damian Harris, and James White, and there's not a lot of versatility outside of James White. So I thought they were going to be taking a pass-catching back, but they went in the complete opposite direction, taking the 5'11", 227-pound Ramondre Stevenson. So they got themselves a bowling ball in the backfield.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, he just, because it seems like Belichick just wants a guy who can hold on to the ball and move forward, not backward. So mm-hmm. I think as long as they get that out of him, it will be a good pick. And again, it's a running back in the fourth round, but I was a little surprised they didn't take somebody with a little bit more pass catching ability. But is there anything else that you can tell us about Stevenson as a player?
Yeah, I was also surprised that I had actually written something last week about potential running backs that the Patriots could go up and grab. And pretty much every single one of them I had was not a pass catching first, but a guy who can do it pretty well. And mm-hmm. Stevenson wasn't terrible last year. I mean, 18 receptions it's not going to jump off the page for you for a running back. What Stevenson does well and what will get him on the field more often than not early on is that he is a great pass blocker. Mm. So you're going to have a guy who can pick up the blitz when you see a lot of times the Patriots, they do rely on that, but some of the backs that they've had recently haven't been as great at it, which is why you've seen guys like Rex Burkhead get more burn or stuff like that. And I think on top of that, you also get a team that struggled in the red zone last year. You get a bully running back. And if he, just watching his highlights, the amount of tackles that he was breaking, just because his balance is so good when people are running into a 230 30-pound running back. They're bouncing off of him and just falling down. I mean, that is what's going to happen when you get to the second level. So behind a good offensive line, this is a guy who he could be good down the line. And I think it's another pick where you may not have a huge need for a two-down running back right now, but Sony Michel is planning on coming off the books next year. And then you're stuck with Damian Harris, and then Damian Harris is, what, another year, maybe two after that? So this is more of a planning for the future type move, and then maybe you draft a pick up a pass-catching running back either in free agency or the draft next year.
Yeah, I think we've definitely gotten to the point in the NFL where it seems like people are starting to smarten up and not take the running back too early. Mm-hmm. Unless you're Jacksonville and you draft Trevor Lawrence first overall, and then with your second pick in the first round, you take his teammate, who wasn't even the best running back in the class, in my opinion.
Right. Like, you just do it just to appease your quarterback after you had a undrafted 1,000-yard rusher last year.
The stupidest thing they could, like, what do they want? A running back for each down? We're going to have a first down back, a second down back, a third down back, and then a fourth down back.
Well, there's going to be a lot of storylines down there, especially if they sign Tim Tebow to play tight end. So Jacksonville's a circus.
Huge circus. So in the fifth round, New England, they decide to change things up and they take a linebacker out of Michigan. It was not the defensive player out of Michigan that I wanted them to take. He went a little bit earlier. And I'm so happy that this guy's getting the pull that he is, because nobody's mentioned. I'm sure he's probably getting like the Rhode Island thing thrown out there every now and then. But like, what a great draft moment with Quiddy Pay when they're like interviewing him afterwards. And they're like, oh, what does this mean to you? Oh, does it mean the world? You know, this person right here, this mom, my mom, she's not going to have to work again. Like,
yeah, like immediately knowing, like, you can say my mom's retired the second you sign a contract. That must be such a great feeling. Yeah. What a great story, that whole thing. If anybody hasn't like read into Quiddy Pay other than Nick's apparent love for him, you need to go out and do a deep dive, because he's an amazing story.
I'm hoping 4 years from now they don't pick up his fifth year option and New England can take him home. Bring him home.
Bring that guy home.
The Hendrickson flag was a little weird though. I think that was his high school coach, because it was definitely the only white guy in the room.
Yeah.
So had to be the high school coach.
Had to be.
But in the fifth round, they went with Cameron McGrone, linebacker out of Michigan. 6'1", 236 pounds. We're seeing a lot of small linebackers now, just like you were talking about, how it's almost like they're drafting positionless players, people who can play in the secondary, people who can play in the box, who can play on the line, off the line, do a lot of different things. Obviously, I know nothing about this guy because I did not watch many Michigan games this year. But what can you tell us about McGrone, how he's going to fit into the now almost strength of the defense, the linebacking core?
Yeah, you mentioned it. Very rare to see them go Michigan linebacker. They almost never do it. It's insane. Like four drafts in a row now. McGrone is a guy who, coming off a torn ACL last season, he's probably going to be a little bit behind the ball entering his rookie year. He isn't like a huge sack guy, so he's not going to be a pass rusher per se. He's kind of like that middle linebacker role that we saw filled by Juwan Bentley last season. And maybe they're hoping to get a little bit more than they got from Juwan Bentley. If you remember, first preseason, everybody already had him pegged as the next Jerod Mayo, the next Dante Hightower, and he hasn't really lived up to their expectation. And you're right, he's a smaller guy, so maybe McGrone comes in and he can take some of those reps from Adrian Phillips that maybe he it's not going to be easy for a guy that's 5'11 like Adrian Phillips to continue to smash into running backs and tight ends over and over. It's hard to keep that up. So I think it's more of a depth piece for right now. And then again, when you are looking at next year, when I think Juwan Bentley's rookie contract is up and Hightower is up in the air again, because no one really knows his future at this point. You have a linebacker who may be able to step in. The thing is he's only played 16 games in college. So this is a guy who is going to need some time in the NFL. And you're getting the coaching from not only a great defensive mind in Bill Belichick, but from what everybody says is a great leader. I mean, in Dante Hightower, Anthony Jennings last season was talking about how Hightower wasn't playing as he opted out, and he was texting with him like every day about his technique.
Awesome. Like, yeah, that's great.
That is what you want in your leaders. And That's what you get from guys from Alabama, apparently.
Yeah, but it does seem like this pick is going to be almost like one of those draft and stash guys. Like New England does this almost every year, where they'll take a guy who's maybe a little injured, a little banged up, and they'll say, all right, we're just going to put you on the pup, then we're going to put you on IR, and you're just going to stick around for the year, and that will be your freshman season for us. We're going to redshirt you and then come back. You'll know a little bit more about the league. You'll have had an opportunity to get into the weight room without having to worry about further injuring yourself, so you can rehabilitate the ACL and your leg and whatnot. But wouldn't be surprised if we have to wait until the 2022 season before McGrone plays majority of the snaps.
Mm-hmm.
In the sixth round, they filled another position that I think was not a need for them, but something that you want to at least invest in now, so that when this time does come, which I think is going to be sooner rather than later, you're ready to go with someone you're familiar with.
Right. And it seems like that was kind of a point of this draft and this offseason, was address things a year too early, which is perfect because you can get a bunch of guys in at these positions where, like I said, running back, you have James White ahead of him. There's your team captain. At linebacker, you have Dante Hightower. There's your team captain. At safety, you have Devin McCourty. There's your team captain. You drafted potential fill-ins at all three of those positions, and now you can use them for the year or two before they retire and coach up these guys.
Yep, and utilize that team captain, Devin McCourty. Take another safety. That's what they did with their sixth-round pick, safety out of Missouri, Joshua Bledsoe. He's got to wear number 11, right?
I mean, that would be awesome.
Like, he has to.
That would be really cool.
Now that the rule change is in, and like there is no 11 unless they're going to retire it, which I don't think you can retire that number.
No.
Like, you have to retire 12. You have to retire 87. 11, you're going to have to keep around because you got to have some jersey numbers available to players. Yeah. So if Joshua Bledsoe doesn't wear number 11, that's the biggest upset the entire offseason. But a guy who, again, a little bit versatile. I think we're maybe not looking at the exact center field type player like Devin McCourty is, but somebody who can do a little bit of both. But what else can you tell us about Joshua Bledsoe?
He's a big versatile safety. He's another guy who he fits that prototypical size mold. Get this, 421 snaps in the slot, 129 as box safety, 70 at defensive line. So this is another guy in that Adrian Phillips mold, that Kyle Duggar mold, who can kind of do a little bit of everything at safety. His agility and speed at the college level wasn't great, so I'm not sure how maybe his coverage at the slot position is probably going to drop off a little bit more in the NFL. So maybe you see him a little bit more on tight ends or even some running backs. But I think he's another guy where you can plug and play another safety all over the place. And it's the positionless defense. You have hybrids every single position, and you can throw out 10 guys and none of them are playing at their normal position.
I mean, I remember this is going to be in the way back machine, but early 2000s, that New England defense, it seemed as though everybody except for two or three guys were standing up.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't just standing up, they were moving around. And you heard all the time about how Peyton Manning was this great, great in the mental game, understood playbooks, understood defenses, diagnosing blitzes, just basically being a computer on the field. And New England's defense was able to confuse the hell out of him because they would have so many guys up the line. You didn't know who was coming. You didn't know who was backing off. I mean, I remember one year, I think it was 2010, 2011 was the year when Will Fork dropped back into coverage and just like, it wasn't a tipped interception. It was like a legitimate interception that he got. But if you can have guys that can move around before the ball is snapped, and is he on the line? Is he off the line? Is he inside, outside? Is he playing in the secondary or is he coming down to help out? That's going to cause a lot of confusion. And I think it's definitely going to help out this defense.
Absolutely. Yeah. They have, again, it's just the fact that they brought in so many pieces to this defense that struggled last year when the offense was getting a lot of the attention. And I think a lot of people don't really realize the situation the defense was in going into this offseason. So they had to address a lot of things. And I love the idea of preparing for the loss of older players at these positions. And you went into this offseason where you had Patrick Chung and Devin McCourty, two guys in their mid-30s, and you lost Chung to retirement, and McCourty, maybe you get another season or two out of him, and beyond that, it's probably not anything else. So you have to start planning for these takeovers, this changing of the guard, and he's not going to play the exact way that Devin McCourty has played at safety, but he's a guy who knows the defense, and he's a great leader who can teach them some of that stuff. So I just love how much they can disguise what they're doing this year.
Right.
Like you're going to have guys blitzing from cornerback. You're going to have guys. I wouldn't be surprised if they had like the center field deep safety position. He's going to blitz at some point.
They're going to
do everything. So it's going to be fun to watch what Bill Belichick can do with this defense, and maybe Matt Patricia too. Who knows?
Oh boy. Special assistant. What is it? Assistant to the head coach. That's what his new job title is.
Regional manager.
Exactly. So I was mistaken. They didn't have seven picks. They didn't have seven picks. They had eight picks because they had two in the sixth round. With their second sixth round pick, they took an offensive lineman out of Colorado, William Sherman. Now last year, they took an offensive lineman in the sixth round, Michael Owenu. I don't think they're really expecting Sherman to provide the same amount that Owenu gave them last year. I mean, it's nice that they've drafted a guy who can maybe fill a need down the road. I think they're all set on their offensive line. I think it's going to be some combination of Isaiah Wynn, Shaq Mason, Trent Brown, Owenu, and why am I drawing a blank on the fifth one? Mason. Andrews.
Andrews, yeah.
David Andrews at center. Now, is Sherman more of an inside guard or an outside tackle type guy?
I believe he played mostly tackle, but he's a guy who has done a little bit of everything but center, which is kind of what everybody does in college these days. It's like a lot of late round picks anyway. He's a little bit short to be a tackle, kind of like we've seen with Isaiah Wynn. He's 6'3", and that's short somehow. But
yeah,
that's short for NFL tackles. They're like you said, they're set at the position, and it's another position again where coming up on this season, you have two guys who are entering probably potentially the last year of their deal in both of your tackles. So maybe that's another adjusting like a year too early type thing. Or you can get depth there. And last season, they did hit on Justin Herron in the seventh round for a backup tackle position. Maybe you're able to bring this guy Sherman in, and he can play. He could take over for Corey Cunningham, who was the other backup tackle last season. Or you get more guard depth, because over the last few seasons, it's been a little different in New England. Before, we had seen a lot of health for years and five guys starting, and it's gotten more recent where each guy is going to miss a game or two. And that's kind of happened over the last few years. So you're going to need that depth. And I think he could be that depth piece, probably fits more of a guard, but who knows? They do a little bit of everything on these offensive lines.
I mean, I'm dead serious. It seemed like their picks from round two to six, these guys could play any position, not any position literally, but they do multiple things.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of funny because they always say the NFL is a copycat league, just like every professional league is a copycat league, just like every sport is pretty much a copycat league, actually. And for the longest time, New England had guys that could do multiple things, whether it was run block, pass block, catch passes, run the ball, make tackles off the line, on the line, provide man coverage, zone coverage. Like, they could do anything you ask them to, because when you need to make a second half adjustment and be like, hey guys, we were going man the entire first half, now we got to switch it up and go zone. Okay, fine. We can do that too. So good job on Bill getting another guy that's a little bit of versatility. But with the last pick in the seventh round, 242nd overall, are they looking for another hit on like a seventh round receiver, like a little, not as small, but definitely a little guy, 6 foot, 187 pounds, Trey Nixon, wide receiver out of UCF. The only thing I can tell you about the school UCF is they've got a quarterback, and I don't know the guy's name, but he'll turn into something. He'll be a prospect down the road, maybe within a year or two. again, I don't remember the guy's name, but I was looking up his stats one day and it's like, holy shit, this is a freshman that's going completely untalked about because he plays for Central Florida.
Yeah.
But Trey Nixon, I don't know anything about other than he was originally attended Mississippi and they were recruiting him into the SEC in Alabama and Georgia. And then he transferred to Central Florida. So he took the step down. I'm hoping that he takes that step down because he would get more playing time. And it's not because his ability wasn't what they thought it was, because the SEC, as we've seen now over the last 2 years, 3 years, even produces wide receivers like it's a factory almost.
Right.
But what can you tell us about Trey Nixon as a player?
Well, I think that step down probably had a little bit to do with one, the play time, and two, the fact that you're not playing with the best talent at Ole Miss in a conference that is loaded with talent. So his quarterbacks in 2017 were Shea Patterson, who ended up at Michigan, I believe after that he was at Michigan, and Jordan Te'amu, who famously the Chiefs backup, who had COVID last year and almost got Patrick Mahomes affected. So you don't have like the greatest talent there. So maybe you take the step down and go to the every year undefeated UCF. We're our own national champions, whatever. Last season, Trey Nixon didn't have the best year. He kept only played in four games because of an injury. If you watch his highlight tape, he's fast and his footwork is good. Like, he can get outside very quick. And the highlight tapes that you'll see are you can't even see him. And then all of a sudden he's catching the ball like 40 yards down the field, which that doesn't necessarily fit in with what the Patriots were trying to do, at least with Cam Newton anyway. And maybe that changes with Mac Jones, obviously, because he should have a better arm than Cam.
Oh,
Newton.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. They took Mac Jones in the first round.
Yeah. Spoilers. But from what everybody is saying, and not that I've watched 1,000 UCF games, is that he does have a lot of good underneath ability. Right now, your slot receiver is Jacoby Myers. And for as much of a fan favorite as Jacoby Myers is, I'm sure you can upgrade there. And you're not necessarily going to find those guys in the seventh round. Jacoby Myers was undrafted anyway. But this is, like I said at the beginning of our recording, like, this is a draft where tight ends were, I mean, wide receivers were one of the better positions in the draft. So you might get a guy who's projected to be a fifth round wide receiver like Nixon was in the seventh round. And you look at his comparisons, it's a guy like Robbie Anderson, who was awesome last year.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, if you can get that Robbie Anderson type production out of a seventh round pick, I'll take that every day of the week.
So are we looking at Nixon as more of an inside guy or an outside guy then?
I think it's a little bit of another thing. Like the first six picks is like, you can do a little bit of everything. This is a guy who, when I watched this tape, I said, he's 6 foot. He's not going to be able to extend the field or do these type of things. But almost every play in his highlight packages were deep routes. Like, he was able to get off the line and just run past guys. And then he also has that footwork ability to stop and go, make your guy miss, cut in, do a couple little different things. So I think he's a guy who can maybe motion from outside to inside and maybe create some more matchup problems. You don't have a slot cornerback on him, or if you do and you move him to the outside, and then you're able to go deep on a safety or something like that.
Yeah.
It's more depth stuff. And I was a little disappointed that they didn't address wide receiver earlier in the draft, because that was a big need for me going into at least day two. And there were a lot of guys that probably could have been starters right away. Maybe not a wide receiver number one, but a wide receiver two going into their rookie year. And they didn't address that. But I'm glad they brought in somebody who can maybe at least contribute and take a seat from N'Keal Harry, possibly.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I was playing Madden the other day and I updated the rosters. Like, I made all the trades and signed all the free agents and whatnot. And I'm looking at the depth chart at wide receiver and I'm like, holy shit. N'Keal Harry is like their sixth best receiver now.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
This guy's he might not make the team. He probably shouldn't make the team. And it sounds like he doesn't want to make the team, because they were like, oh no, I'm fine. I'll just keep doing what I was doing before. Looking forward to next year. Get better. Blah, 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 blah. Oh boy. Yeah, they. I think a receiver would have been nice for them to take more of an impact position, but we all know their history in drafting receivers. It's not. I don't think it's that they can't draft them. It's that they can't develop them. Because like Pittsburgh can get a receiver every year. It seems like they just come out of the woodwork. But it's, I don't know. I just think it's shouldn't be that difficult to draft a receiver into the NFL. Like if you're just going based on physical skills and you have a complex offense, then yeah, that's not good enough. And if you're just going on their ability to understand the offense, but they can't get off the line and they're running like a 4.6 40, yeah, it's probably not going to translate well to the National Football League. So hopefully they've found themselves a little bit of balance with Trey Nixon in the seventh round.
Yeah. I also hope that picking N'Keal Harry and having him be a bust doesn't scare them away from like taking a wide receiver early again.
Right.
Cause that was the first time that you took a first round wide receiver in 20 years. And like, it didn't work out, but you're going to have, it's not going to always be that way. Like you can't miss every time.
Hopefully not. I mean, just by accident, you should hit 50% of the time.
Right. In the first round, especially when you're in like the 15th pick. So right. Like if you're going to be in that area, like you should have those good guys.
Well, this year they did select 15th overall and they filled a position of need. Maybe. Of course, at this position, it's always a maybe. They went with the quarterback out of Alabama, Mac Jones. Mac Jones, who for weeks was being rumored to be selected by the San Francisco 49ers third overall. And then they kind of surprised people, although the day of the draft or night one of the draft, there was a lot of talk about, you know, Trey Lance possibly being the favorite to go third overall. And some betting odds had changed on different sites and different sports books to make Trey Lance the favorite to go third overall. And Mac Jones slipped, and Mac Jones didn't just slip from third overall. He slipped from 12 overall where the Chicago Bears, I think, traded up, or maybe it was 11. It was either 11 or 12, right around that area. They traded up to get Justin Fields. So Mac Jones ends up Patriot. I think at this point, we all know what Mac Jones is as a player. You know, there were the comparables of Tom Brady, not because of his ability to necessarily win. It was because he's a pocket passer, bigger body, and doesn't turn the ball over, which is exactly what Belichick looks for. It's right. Really what every coach should look for in a quarterback, not to turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to ask you about the player. I just want your opinion on Mac Jones. Do you think that it was the right choice at 15 overall, number one? And number two, if you had the option of taking Mac Jones or Justin Fields, would you have still taken Mac Jones?
So I'm going to start with your second one.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
For me, watching this draft, once I saw Justin Fields drop past Denver, I said, this is a done deal. Like, go up and go get your quarterback. Like, make it happen. And then Chicago trades up, and everybody knew the second Chicago was trading up, they're not trading up for
Mac Jones.
They're not trading up for a cornerback. They're not trading up for Mac Jones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're going to go get the guy. So it almost felt like, and this is no dig at Mac Jones, but it almost felt like a loss.
Yes.
When Mac Jones was there at 15.
Yes.
Because Justin Fields, to me, we had talked about it last week, he was the guy I wanted. If you're going a rookie quarterback, you know, that was the guy I wanted. And to have him be so close, only three picks away, and you weren't willing to either move up. And maybe the thing is that they were going to get a hell of a lot more from Chicago, because I think they ended up getting like an extra first, like a second and a fourth or something like that to move up. So maybe it's the fact that they weren't willing to take the Patriots offer, but there have been reports that they weren't really looking to move up. And Mac Jones was the guy I had always thought if there was a quarterback to fall to 15, it's going to be Mac Jones. I don't think it's going to be anybody else, because I think once he slipped past three, I think everybody else was kind of the realization this isn't like a top 10 player in this draft right now.
But that's what kind of makes me a little concerned, is that he was just the guy that was left over, and that New England didn't have to target him, but I'm questioning if they would have. Like if they knew Chicago was going to move up to draft Mac Jones, would they have said, all right, guys, this is who we want. We're going to have to beat Chicago with this offer because, yeah, it would be nice if Justin Fields falls to us, but we want Mac Jones. I don't think they would have done that. I think they really would have taken either guy. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just think Mac Jones is not a sexy pick. I said this another show that I did. He's not a sexy pick. It's just there's nothing that jumps out at you other than like he passed for, what was it, 4,500 yards last year to lead the nation in passing and doesn't turn the ball over that much. And he seems to be more of a fit as a quarterback in the Patriot system than Cam Newton does. Right. And he's hopefully got a better understanding of professionalism than what Jarrett Stidham has. It'll be interesting to see what he turns into. The worst thing that could happen, and I'm telling you, the absolute worst thing that could happen is if Kyle Trask ends up having a better career than Mac Jones. Yeah, and he has a better career because he learns from Tom Brady, because Brady's like, I'm going to handpick you as my backup and I'm going to teach you everything I know because I'm only going to be doing this for two or three more years. And then I'm going to give it to you so you can continue to kick the shit out of the Patriots.
Yeah, that would be a very bad look. And it's finally the quarterback that he decides that he'll teach stuff to. He's not locking him out of TB12 like he did with Jimmy. Yeah, that would be terrible. Yeah, I definitely have those fears about Mac Jones. In my mind, like if you look at his traits, like what he's good at, his accuracy and his decision making, like that, those are the two things that people talk about with Mac Jones. He's not fast. He doesn't have a huge arm, but he makes good decisions. Doesn't turn the ball over, like you had mentioned. Those are the skill sets of Alex Smith.
Right.
Alex Smith went first overall.
Yes.
15 years ago. In a very different league.
Very, very different league.
So, like, could they be great? And a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this as well, Mac Jones succeeded because of the talent that was around him. We had just talked about the amount of wide receivers that they had go in the first round this year. Like, all the players, they had tackles went in the first round. They had everybody. Like, Alabama's loaded.
NFL team. It was a minor league NFL squad.
Right. And there's always that conversation. Would Alabama beat a pro team? And that's a conversation for a reason, because they have a lot of talent there. You can't really take that away from Mac Jones. Like you can't, that's not his fault that he played with great talent. That's not his.
But I question when people say he's accurate. And then I watch the tape or I watch the games and it's like, well, his receivers are wide open.
Right.
I did see a statistic and I think it was a Pro Football Focus statistic where he had the highest passer rating. I'm assuming it was passer rating because I think it was up in the 90s. It was either passer rating or completion percentage throwing into tight windows, whatever they want to define a tight window as. So that is statistical data to back up his ability to be an accurate passer. I just, with my eyes, didn't see it. Like someone would have to show me the passes where there was a tight window and he threw it over the line between linebackers in front of the safety and it was just right in the breadbasket of the receiver and they didn't have to move at all. Like those are the type of throws you're going to have to make at the NFL level.
Right. And the realization is their wide receivers last year are a lot better than New England's wide receivers right now.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe New England has better tight ends, but that's two players out of the whole offense. Like you're still going to go to less talent in the NFL, which is a crazy thing to think about. But when Mac Jones is out there throwing for 77% completion percentage, like that's insane.
Yeah.
And like throw everything out the window. 77 is a ludicrous number. Like I can't even imagine that like actually playing out. Especially after last year.
And it's also not a disguising 77% completion percentage where he's only throwing the ball 20 times a game like Trey Lance was doing in his only year of college football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think he does have the traits that they like. And I just do fear that you got the fifth quarterback out of five and you took him because, hey, that's what we know. We need a quarterback. This is the guy who's available and we don't want to spend any other assets to move up because we like draft picks. And I hope that's not the case and that they actually did like Mac Jones. And because we don't know that Bill Belichick wasn't saying Mac Jones is our guy all along. If he goes third, then we'll trade out a quarterback. We don't want that position anymore right now. So we don't really know. And should we fault him? Like if Mac Jones, say Bill Belichick traded up and selected Mac Jones over Justin Fields, and now he's the fourth guy that went instead of the fifth guy, but it's the same quarterback. Would that change things? Like,
absolutely, it would change
now
things.
Now you know that they really wanted him, and we won't really get those answers. But from what everything that Mac Jones has said is that he's been talking with Belichick and talking with Saban about Belichick, and they've had this back and forth throughout the draft, and other quarterbacks have said that they didn't really talk to Belichick at all. So it seems like, anyway, from with all the context, like not direct statements from Belichick, that this is the guy that they wanted. Happened to fall to them at 15.
What I'm looking forward to most was the report that was coming out probably on Friday. I don't remember where it was coming from, but they were saying like Bill Belichick is excited about getting the opportunity to mentor and teach and grow a potential franchise quarterback, something he hasn't done since Tom Brady 20 years ago. So the fact that you've got something to keep Belichick motivated and keep him engaged, I think that's the number one, the number one thing that you needed to get out of this draft was giving Bill a reason to stay invested in the team. Because look, he is getting up there in age. I'm not going to say how old he is, but he's definitely, nice. he's definitely closer to the end than the middle. And I'm talking football life, not actual life, but I guess actual life also.
But also actual life.
Oh, yeah. But who knows how many more years he's going to be sticking around and helping out the team. Like, I don't think he'll be the type of guy to leave the field and go up in the press box and become like a full-time general manager or like a team president once Jonathan leaves that position to take over his owner. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's a coach.
No.
We hear that all the time. Like, he's a coach. Like, he needs to have a whistle in his hand. So, right. I mean, again, are we going to get five more years of Belichick so that he can go through the entire rookie contract of Mac Jones? Maybe. But now we're talking, he's going to be like in his mid-70s coaching. That's a long time. It's a very long time. But it does seem like he's excited and invested in teaching that next quarterback. And he's got a long way to learn. And he's got he'll never be Tom Brady. He will never be right. Tom Brady. And I think the faster New England fans can accept that, the better. So when you hear those Tom Brady comparisons, just know that it's because he's a tall white guy that can't run and right. plays quarterback. Hmm? That's where the comparison
and he wants to win. Like, that's the thing. Like, you've had quarterbacks who you have seen maybe are a little not as fascinated with football, not as in love with football. Like Trevor Lawrence, for example. I mean, there was the whole thing last week that his dad or his brother, he could just retire and he'd be fine. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't love football. And not that that's a bad thing, but I think it's I don't think it could be bad that you don't love football, but I think it could be a plus if you do love football. Like,
yeah, because
I don't want to take that away from.
Well, when the days get tough, I mean, they don't have 2-a-days anymore in training camp, but when you're in the middle of November and Thanksgiving's right around the corner and you're thinking about your family and the holidays and the end of the season, but you're in a race for a division crown, how dedicated are you going to be? Are you going to be staying a little extra early, Are you going to be coming in a little bit early? Those are the questions that you never had to ask about Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Philip Rivers. I mean, he was so dedicated to football that he stayed in San Diego and would drive an hour and a half just to practice in Los Angeles. Or I think it was like 2 hours or something ridiculous. Now, mm-hmm. you could also say that he's just didn't want to move, but he could have retired. He could have requested a trade if he wasn't satisfied with where he was playing. No, he took it on himself. Like, I'm going to live where I want to live and I'm going to play football where I can play football. Like, the two things can happen simultaneously. I don't need to make it so convenient for my life that it's two steps away from my house.
Right.
Yeah. Mac Jones loving football and being, I think anybody who lasts at least 3 to 4 years in college with Nick Saban as your head coach, you have to love football.
Yeah.
Because the expectation from Saban is that you are going to make the ultimate sacrifice for the team. And, you know, it's interesting to think about how the quarterbacks at Alabama have gone over the last 4 or 5 years, where you started off with Jalen Hurts and he was good for you and he got you to a national championship and then underperformed in the first half. So when they decide to do is bring in Tua, and Tua plays awesome in the second half of that national championship and Alabama wins it. Then Tua has his career, right? Because Hurts leaves to go to Oklahoma. Tua is now the starter. And we find out that Tua is made of glass. So Mac Jones gets an opportunity to come in and play with the same offense that Tua did. And Tua goes third overall, fourth overall last year.
It was either third or fifth. Yeah.
He was like top five, top 10 though, for sure. And you ask Jalen Waddle, well, who's the better quarterback, Mac Jones or Tua? And they're like, oh, Mac Jones. And you ask Devontae Smith, who's the better quarterback, Mac Jones or Tua? And they're like, Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. So you've got two of those elite pass catchers that set, and this was before they got drafted and before Devontae Smith ended up with, Devontae Smith ended up with Jalen Hurts and Jalen Waddle ended up with Tua. So Right. They both ended up with former quarterbacks. It's just interesting that they would both say Mac Jones was the better of the two in comparison to other guys that they've had. So I'm hopeful that Mac Jones ends up being the better of the three quarterbacks or the two quarterbacks. I think he's probably in the best organization, the best position for him to succeed. I still doubt the wide receivers.
Right. Question for you.
Ooh.
Two-part question.
Ooh.
What do you want to play out for the quarterback position this season?
Mm-hmm.
As in, like, when do you want him to start? When do you want him to take over? And what do you think will actually happen?
So I would like for him to get some time on the bench. Now that we've got somebody in the room that's more competent of a passer, I don't need to see him right away.
Right.
I think, to be honest with you, we can afford to have that September, like the extension of the preseason again, not because they're playing an extra game, but because your team is probably going to look a hell of a lot different in October than it is right out of August in training camp. So I would like for him to be on the bench for at least half a season. Now, the only problem is when you start the guy who you think is going to give you a better chance of winning, when you start him on the bench, you're only going to really be able to bring him into a situation that's bad.
Right.
You're not going to take out your quarterback if he's playing well. You're only going to take out your quarterback if he's playing poorly or if the offense is performing, you know, not to the expectations or to the ability that they can. So you would be putting Mac Jones in a position to fail. I think they're definitely going to keep just two quarterbacks. I don't see them sticking with three because I think they're going to value that roster spot. So I don't know, though, if they're going to go with. Here's my prediction. You start with Cam Newton. You get rid of Jarrett Stidham and Mac Jones as your backup. And you let Cam be Cam. And then as soon as you feel like Mac Jones is ready, that's when you bring him in. Not when Cam starts to fail, but when Mac is ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd hate for him to be the third quarterback on the depth chart. And it's like Cam sucks. Then we throw in Stidham and Stidham sucks. Now we got to go with Mac or Stidham does well and we want to keep him. And now we spent the 15th overall pick on a guy that's going to be on the bench because Jarrett Stidham's performing well. Like, as many answers as you've gotten from this draft, it's opened up a lot of questions as well.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You're in a position where the thing is Stidham still hasn't really played. Like,
he's never gotten a start.
You've seen him in instances coming off cold off the bench. Like, this guy's going to come in and play for a half. This guy's going to come in and play for a quarter, a drive. You've seen him in all these situations, except for when he gets the starting scenario. Like, you haven't seen that yet. I would like them to keep three. I would like to see that happen, because if you do have to end up making the move to you, I would hope that you would make the move to Mac Jones some point this season, please, dear God.
Unless things are going well, though. Like, if we seriously get a rejuvenated renaissance of Cam Newton because he gets an off season and he gets some time in the playbook and he gets some time to spend learning more about the offense, and he has a little bit more time to recover from injuries. Like, if he's doing well, keep him. Let him keep playing. I don't need to see Mac Jones this year.
But like, what are the percent?
I'd like to though.
What's the chances that you get that? Like, put a number on it. Like 15%, 10%,
5%.
Right. Like how much maybe it is the injury thing, but how much is adding two pretty solid tight ends? How much is that going to fix him throwing the ball at their feet? Like that is the tough thing there. I at some point I would hope Mac Jones would be in. I don't think Cam wants to be a backup. So I think honestly, when Mac Jones is ready to take over, I think Cam just gets cut. Yeah. I think Belichick says, thank you for what you've done here. You've been the ultimate professional, whatever you Belichick speak. It's been a great working for you for all these time, Cam. Thank you for so much, everything you've done in the locker room. And then you cut Cam, let him go. If he's had a decent season, maybe he finds somewhere else that he can help out if there's an injury somewhere. And
well, but that's what we're talking about, right? So if he's not going to be starting in New England and he gets cut by the Patriots, who's going to pick him up to start? If that's what he wants, is to be a
right,
starter.
That's his only hope. And that was his only hope if New England didn't pick him up too. He wasn't going anywhere. And that the Patriots were ready to jump on him. They didn't pay him anything, but they were ready to jump on him, just ready to get him in the door.
I wonder if there wasn't a pandemic, if he'd be open to playing in the CFL.
Huh.
Is the Arena League still a thing?
It is still a thing. I don't know if it's a thing right now, but it is still a thing.
He'll have the XFL when that comes back for the third time. He'll be the anti Kurt Warner, where he'll be an MVP in the NFL and then he'll go and win championships in the lower leagues.
I would love to see him go play in that fan controlled league. I don't know if you're following that. Yeah. Have him.
Light it up.
You have him, you have Johnny Manziel, Josh Gordon, like all this talent is all there. Like, start pumping in all these X stars. Let it happen.
Yeah. You'll make people watch.
Yeah. That's how you get eyes. Like, I don't want to see John Johnson, fourth string wide receiver out of Utah. Like, I don't want to watch him play, but
you don't
I'll watch.
Not a John Johnson fan.
not a huge John Johnson fan, but I'll watch struggling ex-NFL players or guys who have dealt with issues, like get all those guys in. I'm here to watch it. I'm here to watch Tebow. If you bring him in that league, I'll tune in and then watch him suck and then not watch again, but I'll watch it for the first time.
That whole situation that's going on in Jacksonville is really kind of mind-boggling as well. So you've got Trevor Lawrence. Now you've got his running back from college to go along with, again, like a good running back core as is. So what's the next step for Urban Meyer? Let me move into a neighborhood that's two doors down from my former quarterback at Florida and bring him to the facility and see if he can work out as a tight end. I know that people used to say Tim Tebow should have come into the NFL and changed positions because he was never going to be a quarterback, but he was kind of too stubborn to do so. He's not a tight end. Like, he doesn't really have the body of a tight end. People think he's a lot bigger than he really is. He's only like 6'1".
Right. He's a fullback is what he is.
Yeah. Like, he's a football player.
Right.
You can figure out a way where him being on your team will make you better, but he's not he doesn't have a traditional position. He's a versatile guy. Like,
and again, now he's 32 and hasn't played football in 5-6 years now, at least.
Yeah, but Jesus didn't reach his peak until he was about 33. So.
That is true. So we are getting ready for the ascension of Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
If this is all a storyline to take pressure off of your now number one overall pick quarterback, and you're like, hey, I'll bring in a media circus and no one will even pay attention to Trevor, then that's a genius move.
Urban Meyer has never coached in the NFL at any level, I don't think, as like an assistant, head coach, coordinator. I'm pretty sure he's only ever been in college. So this is going to be... This is his first experience in the biggest of leagues. So he's made some pretty ballsy decisions already. Like, it's a no-brainer to draft Trevor Lawrence. And I think Jacksonville probably had a good draft. And I also give Jacksonville a hell of a lot more credit for the roster that they had outside of the quarterback. Like, that was a team that went 1-15 that didn't need to go 1-15. They started off the season with a good win against the Colts. And I think it was on the road too. Mm-hmm. And then they just like fell into the toilet and we're like, all right, well, let's just tank for the rest of the season and see what happens. I think that Urban Meyer a successful season for Urban Meyer in his first year as an NFL coach, around 500. Again, it sucks that they're playing an odd number of games, because I would say like 8-8 should be the benchmark. So I would say 7-10 should be the benchmark for them, or 7-10. That would make it 8-9, right around there. 7-10, 8-9. I don't think they have a winning record, but I think they're around 500. And that would be a good season. It would be a good first season.
Right. And that's what you're hoping out of a stud prospect in this first year.
So if you had to give an overall grade for the Patriots on their draft, we'll go, what do you want to do, letters or numbers?
Well, Bill Belichick says he grades all his players on letters, numbers, and colors. So I don't know if we want to do a combination of those, but no, let's just do letters.
All right. A through F, what would you give the draft as a whole? And you obviously know more about the players than I do. I can only go based off of what I've read, and what I've read has been nothing near as much as what you've read. So mine is probably going to be completely different than yours. But
right.
What's your grade for the draft?
It's like when you're grading these drafts, it's mostly like you're going to get the guys you – it's mostly based around the guys who are going to impact the team the most. Like is the addition of – Trey Nixon really going to impact my draft grade all that much? So I think with your first three or four picks, like, I think he did a pretty solid job. I would say it's a B. I mean, it's a boring grade, but it's like, that's it. You got three positions of need or potential need, and three players who were at least rumored or discussed to all go earlier than where you drafted them. And Mac Jones may not be the best quarterback that I've seen, or he's not going to light the world on fire, but you needed a quarterback and you addressed the position. Yeah. That's all I could ask for.
The nice thing about Mac Jones is the only way he can truly fail is if he doesn't have a legitimate NFL career.
He needs to make it through his second contract.
I think that's fair. I think that's definitely fair. And as someone had noted to me before, you're going to have him for possibly 5 years because of his fifth year option. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have him for an additional 2 years if you really want him under roster control, because you could franchise him up to 2 years. So that's 7 years of theoretical roster control. That's plenty of time to figure out whether or not he's the guy.
Also, on fifth year options, we've never drafted a quarterback in the first round, at least not since 1993. So
it's expensive.
Looking at that, I was under the impression that fifth year options are kind of slated by pick or some other way. Quarterbacks are making $20 million on their fifth year option.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson went last pick in the first round. He's making $23 million on his fifth year option. So yeah, it is an investment. It is definitely an investment. But hey, if the quarterback is good, you're going to have to pay them. You got lucky with Tom Brady in way more ways than one, including the financial side. But you're not going to get that anymore.
Yeah, you have to pay eventually.
Unless they really wanted to restructure and extend him after like year three. And be
where
like,
you really needle them, and you're like, you're Tom Brady? Are you really Tom Brady?
Yeah,
take less money.
Exactly. A B for you. Yeah, you know what? I was gonna put it at a B+. I thought that they did a good job. So we're right around the same area. I give them credit for not being spiteful and taking either a position that they didn't need or a player that didn't have that value with the 15th overall pick. My prediction going into the draft was that they were going to be trading up. I thought that they would be trading up with number 15, or that they would be trading back into the first round. I was like six picks away from that being a possibility. but it feels like there's a plan. It felt like there was a plan in this draft. It felt like this offseason there's been a plan. And it's, to me, more confirmation that New England as a franchise is in good hands with the Crafts. Because they're not going to just sit by with, you know, their fingers up their nose and do absolutely nothing and just say, well, we let the football people make the football decisions and the business people make the business decisions. It's like, no, be involved. Don't be too involved. Like, trust your football guys to make the decisions, but, you know, put them to the fire. Let them know that we expect excellence year in and year out. And if it's not what we were expecting and it's not good enough, you got to improve and we'll give you a year to do it. And if you don't do it within a year, you're out.
Right.
There has to be accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so what is it? May 3rd? How long do we have to wait until kickoff?
It's like still 5 months somehow. It's going to be the longest 5 months of my life.
But it'll be a good off season, right? So the schedule gets released May 12th, and we'll figure out when New England plays their games, not who they're playing. We already know who they're playing. But I think right at the end of May, beginning of June, is when the rookie minicamps start, and that's when mm-hmm. we'll start hearing a little bit more about each of these guys. And then right around that time, that wraps up, and 2 weeks later, you're talking about training camp. So, I mean, even though on the calendar it seems far away, like the football season is right around the corner. There's going to be a lot of news, a lot of developments to come out. We're going to have a lot to talk about, and I'm excited.
Me too. It's good. This weekend made me happier than I've been in a while. Some other than Marvel TV shows, this has been the one thing getting me through this time.
It has been a difficult 300 and what call it 70 days, 80 yeah. days for this region, but yeah, I mean we're things are looking up. I guess we may be getting 100% capacity at Gillette Stadium this fall, but you know, by August 1st they're hoping at least. So it's going to feel like a football season. And the one thing that I hope that, and when it comes to Mac Jones, let's take care of him, guys. Let's make sure that he stays out of the bars past like 11 o'clock, because I think he likes to party. He's yeah. definitely the type of guy that likes to have a good time, and we can show him a good time, but let's also make sure that he's taken care of. So as responsible as he needs to be, we as fans and the community in the New England area need to be responsible for him as well.
Yeah. Call him an Uber if he needs one.
Yeah. Oh, Mike, I think that's going to do it for another episode. Yeah. I was episode 41 now.
Wow. We are just stacking them up.
Flying by. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything that you're looking forward to this week? Do you have a final blow?
I don't really necessarily know that I have a final blow. I want everybody who's listening to have a great week. I think we are finally starting to get to maybe some better weather and we can all go outside. And yep. I think it's like, I don't know, cause I'm stuck in a basement right now, but I think it's like 75 degrees out right now. This is awesome.
All I know is from elementary school, April showers bring May flowers. So
that is what they said.
Hoping for the buds to start bursting now.
Yeah. I can't wait. What's your final blow?
I don't have a final blow. I'm really not looking forward to anything. I'm looking
Couldn't even take the weather.
I mean, the weather's nice. I'll put it to you this way. This weekend was a waste for me because I was asleep all day. I didn't wake up until 5 o'clock on Saturday, and I didn't wake up until 9 o'clock on Sunday. And I mean, PM.
Because of work or because of other things?
Because of work. Oh, but okay. It's like, also, not really because of other things, but it's like, you know what it is? Here we go with this not being able to end the episode properly, but I will finish my work around like 1 or 2 o'clock at night. And then I'm just awake for another 3 or 4 hours after that. I just can't get back to sleep. And then if I don't have anything that I need to get up for in the day, it's like, well, there goes a day. 5 o'clock AM or PM? PM.
Yeah. Oh. PM. And you're also awake when the sun's not out. So 75 degrees doesn't really matter to you.
Well, I'm going to try and take advantage of today because I woke up early enough so we could record. But
please enjoy the day.
But that's going to do it for another episode of Moving the Goalposts, episode 41. We always want to make sure that we're keeping in touch with our listeners. You can keep in touch with me on Twitter or Instagram at NickMara94. Mike, once again, where can the listeners reach you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mike_Masala or on Instagram at MikeMasalaNFL.
Be sure to follow along on the social media profiles for the podcast. They can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Moving the Posts. Mike, till next time.
Later, brother.
Peace.